The date is July 30th, 1966, and we're watching Batman the Movie. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Joker to my Penguin.
Oh man, I had this whole Robin thing where I was going to be like, holy podcast, Batman! But anyways, my name's Colin Stewart.
And this week, we attempted to round out our rogues gallery by bringing back a fabulous married couple. We got half of them, and we are happy with the half that we got. Please welcome the Riddler to our Joker and Penguin, and one of the hosts of the fabulous comic book couples counseling podcast, Brad Gullickson.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me. Sorry that you got the lesser half of comic book couples counseling.
Well, the lesser half
is happy to be here.
Yeah, we'll make sure that Lisa hears that. You know, we know how much you boost her up on your own show, but we'll make sure that she knows that you are giving words of affirmation to her everywhere else you go.
Yes, yes, yes. Please.
Yeah. So I am sure you have seen The Batman.
Oh, yeah, I've seen all the Batman. I've seen every Batman that's ever Batman.
Okay. I'm wondering. We did record ourselves a little bonus episode on that as well. So we did talk about it at length in a previous episode, but I have a feeling it will probably come up at some point. I figured you had probably seen it before either of us even had, but just in case, for you were caught in some like mirror dimension
for the last
week and haven't been able to see it, you know.
I've seen it four times.
Okay, outstanding.
Oh, wow.
Outstanding. You're tied with my son at this point, so. So now, the last time we saw you, we picked an obscure comic book movie adaptation, and we did Mystery Men. And so this time, Batman the Movie. Brad, I know that you have seen all of the Batman the movies that there are. Do you go as far as, like, even all of the animated, like, Mask of the Phantasm? And, like, there's those ones. But then what about, like, the sequels to Batman the Movie? Have you also seen those?
I don't know if I can claim every single Batman movie, just because anytime you say that you've seen everything, someone will come around and be like, oh, but you forgot about such and such. But I believe I've seen every Batman feature that has ever existed, including, you know, Batman Brave and the Bold meets Scooby-Doo, Batman versus Dracula.
Yeah,
things like that. Yes. And of course, the 1944 serial and its sequel, Batman and Robin. I've seen all of those.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've read incredibly on Letterboxd. So find me on Letterboxd.
I was reading, because obviously with the Batman coming out, there's all sorts of, you know, who is the best Batman, or Batman, the film history or whatever. Apparently those 1940s ones are quite racist.
They are. Calling them quite racist is like being nice to them, and we shouldn't. Screw those guys. They're super racist. They're very racist. I love serials, but I would not ever recommend either of the Batman serials to anybody. I would recommend the Captain Marvel serial that is, you know, that becomes Shazam. That one is quite good. It might still have some racism in it.
Probably.
But not, I don't think it's as bad as what you get in the 44 Batman in particular. Batman and Robin serial is still not great, but the first Batman one is crazy racist. Correct. Yes.
Okay. I was going to say, like, anything pre 1960, I'm probably going to assume has a little bit of racism caked in.
Sadly, a good policy.
Yeah, I mean, I snuck it in there. You didn't touch on it, though, but have you seen the animated sequels to this movie? There are two.
Yeah, yes, Return of the Caped Crusaders. And my favorite one is Batman versus Two-Face, because William Shatner does the voice of Two-Face.
Absolutely.
And I actually did like back in 2017 when that came out for Film School Rejects, I was doing a ranking of the best movies that came out in 2017 that you did not watch. And that was on my list.
Okay, right on. So this week we're looking back at July 1966 when the movies in theaters were... Get ready for a bunch of movies that I personally have never heard of. War of the Gargantuas.
Classic.
War Between the Planets. The Plainsman. Daniel Boone, Frontier Trail Rider. And here are some bonuses, because this is fun. How about Our Man in Marrakesh? I think that's probably one of those famously racist movies that's probably out there. I imagine Our Man in Marrakesh is not played by someone that looks like they're from Marrakesh. Namu the Killer Whale. Gulliver's Travels Beyond the Moon in color. And of course, our movie for today, Batman the Movie, which earned $3.9 million on a $1.378 million budget. Taken to the inflation calculator, that's approximately $33 million against a $12 million budget.
Not too bad.
Wow, not bad. If you have not seen War of the Gargantuas, the Toho classic, I would recommend that. Ishiro Honda directed that, same director as Godzilla. It's quite fabulous.
Now, out of all of those, how many of those movies have you heard of? Because you have a little bit more of an eclectic taste in movies. Like, you have some deep cuts that you go to.
War of the Gargantuas is certainly the only one that I have watched. Our Man in Marrakesh, I have heard of. I have no idea what it's about.
Okay.
And you said The Plainsman? That certainly sounds familiar, but yeah. I haven't seen it.
Okay, okay.
I'm most excited about Gulliver's Travels on the Moon.
That sounds rad.
Yeah. I love these, like, how far can we take this concept? To space!
Everything goes to space. Yeah. If Jason could go to space, Gulliver's Travels has got to go to space. I'm looking it up now on IMDb.
Nice. But as always, there is going to be whap, bang, pow, spoilers all up in this podcast. So if you don't want this podcast to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So I have found two different taglines that appear on the poster for this movie. The first is, he's here, big as life, in a real bat epic. Hyphenated bat epic, of course, right?
Yeah, of course. It had to be bat, like every, it had to be bat film. There's no bat film, or like, it's the biggest bat movie of the bat summer.
Yeah, yeah. Now, for the second one, I've never done this before, but my voice is not right for this tagline. Colin, your voice is not right for this tagline. Brad, I've just sent you a message because I think you're the one that needs to read our second tagline, because this one says it all, and it is epic, and I think you have the right delivery for it.
I just looked at it. Okay, let me get into this character here. Men die, women sigh. Beneath that bat cape, he's all man. And it keeps going.
It keeps going.
For the first time on the motion picture screen in color, Adam West as Batman and Burt Ward as Robin, together with all their fantastic derring do and their dastardly villains too. Love it.
That one is so 60s. Yeah, absolutely. That one's brilliant. But it may not be the best description of this movie, so let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
I rewrote this one so many times I don't even know if it makes sense anymore. When four of Gotham's most volatile villains, the Joker, the Riddler, the Penguin, and the Catwoman, escape from prison, they band together, abduct a seaman, and concoct a plan to dehydrate a group of world leaders in order to cause global unrest for their own monetary gain. The only thing in the way? The Batman. Fearing the interference of the Caped Crusader, the rogues devise additional plans, my favorite of which involves catapulting him through a window into the arms of a waiting, and don't forget, exploding octopus to take out the not-so-dark, in this instance, knight. Meanwhile, with the fate of the world at stake, it's up to Batman and his trusty sidekick Robin to save the day. With the help of the local police, their well-labeled equipment, and an extensive fleet of land, air, and sea vehicles, the Caped Crusaders battle sharks, pirates, and bad luck in their quest to keep the citizens of Gotham safe. Will our heroes be able to outsmart not one, but four of the most devious minds on the planet? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
So, Batman the movie. I mean, it's been around forever. I mean, it's been around my entire lifetime. Like, we're talking about a 56-year-old movie here. I had the entertaining week with the fact that I decided to prep for this episode the night before going to see The Batman. And wow, what a vast difference there is between these two movies. But I grew up on this movie. I was a big watcher of the series as well. I have fond memories of watching that one after school and always making sure that you caught part two, because of course they're all part tours or two-parters.
Part tours, what the hell?
So, I mean, Brad, what is your history with the Adam West incarnation of Batman?
Well, I'm not old enough to have watched it while it aired, but I did watch it religiously in reruns. And my first experience with Batman was through Adam West and Burt Ward's show. Yeah. And I treated it as a kid like it was the most serious show on the planet. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I think many kids my age watch this as if it was Matt Reeves is the Batman, you know? It's very deadly serious business.
We all legitimately thought that he was going to die at the end of every episode.
Yes. and you know, when I go back and revisit it, which I do fairly frequently, I have all the episodes. I love the movie, but the show is like, that's my jam. What I really appreciate about the show, even now recognizing it as camp, is what a celebration it is of the comic book characters, the weirdness that DC Comics and their rogues could be. I love that they parade everyone and then they make up a few for, you know, their own giggles for this series. And I love the ones that they make up too. And I kind of wish that, you know, had continued, because it felt like once we needed to get serious with our comic book adaptations, we narrowed our focus on what like a Batman should be. And what's great about the Batman 60s show and the movie is that they parade all the weirdos from Bookworm to King Tut to the Joker and the Riddler and all the guys that you actually know about.
Yeah. Now, as an avid fan of the show, since there were three different Catwomen that were portrayed in the 60s, do you have a personal preference when it comes to the Catwomen?
I do. I do like all of them for different reasons.
Okay, yeah.
But Julie Newmar is who I see at night when I think of Catwoman.
Okay.
She's the one who comes and visits me. And as a fan of the Monkees, you know, my wife Lisa is a big Julie Newmar fan because she was Miss Laundromat on the Monkees TV series.
Okay.
And, you know, I remember one of the first cons that Lisa and I ever went to was one where we got to meet and do like a quick little signing with Julie Newmar. And Lisa got a little 8x10 signed of Miss Laundromat from the Monkees, and I got one signed Catwoman. So, I also, though, really like Eartha Kitt and Lee Merriweather.
In the Venn diagram of the Gullickson household, right in the middle, right there, we've got Julie Newmar.
Yeah, like in the Zoom chat, if you go through that door right there, you can see some 8x10s hanging.
Yeah.
Around that corner, there's a Julie Newmar 8x10 there.
Nice.
Colin, I know that growing up for you, this was one of your on repeat in the household movies. What is your experience with the Batman TV series from the 60s and the movie?
So I am more familiar with the movie. It's Batman the movie is the first movie I really ever remember watching. It's definitely my first exposure to Batman, and so I was like even though it came out like 20 years before I was born, you know, Adam West will always be my first Batman. I am less familiar with the TV show, even though I do own like the Blu-ray box set.
Yeah,
sounds like a box set.
Yeah, so I it's kind of one of those shows that I watch slowly, almost. Like, I've never just sat down and binged it all, but I just watch it every now and then, and I still like it. I agree with what Brad said, like, watching, even, to be honest, I don't think it was until this watch where I realized how campy it is. when I was really trying to, like, analyze analyze it and take everything in. I've always watched this movie and just felt like it was funny, but like still everything was serious. Like I didn't pick up on all the little tongue-in-cheek jokes and all that. I just kind of like classed that to just the style of the show, I guess.
Have you ever seen the cartoon sequels?
Yeah, I own both of them.
Okay.
And and I read the comic books that they put out, like the Batman 66 comics. So, yeah, I mean, Batman 66 is always, it's a Batman I love. And I also agree with you, Brad, like, in terms of the movies, I think we have, you know, everybody apes the, you know, like, the Dark Knight Returns and the Long Halloween and all these, like, very, very dark versions of Batman. But I know you're, from listening to your podcast, you're a big Grant Morrison fan.
Yeah!
As am I. And I kind of long for somebody to do in movie form what Grant Morrison did in his run of Batman, where we could get like all the takes on Batman put into, or even just like that lighter take to come into play a little bit more, where we could see all the sides of Batman in one movie. It doesn't just have to be this brooding shadow lurker.
Yeah, preach. I definitely agree with that. That's, like, I mean, that's what's so special about Batman. And I guess you could say this about Superman, too, to, I would actually say maybe a little bit lesser degree. But because they've been around for so long, you know, 1939, what's that? That's 83 years, something like that, right?
Yeah, ish.
Since they've been around for so long, and they've had so many creators, they've had thousands of creators touch them. And in that weird baton race of Batman comics, you've had every tone and style and story, and that's what makes them so special. But for whatever reason, cinematically and mainstream wise, ever since 1986 and Frank Miller coming out with The Dark Knight Returns, we've tried to like stay in that like broody headspace. Yeah. And maybe as a reaction to the campiness of the Adam West stuff and our defensive nature as fans, you know, wanting to tell our parents and our teachers, this is adult stuff. And so, look, this is adult stuff. Read Watchmen, read Dark Knight Returns. This is serious business. We've kind of run away from the bright night. But I think now, I think there's room for a bright night. And I think we're kind of craving a bright night.
Well, I mean,
Joel Schumacher tried to bring it back to
less
success.
But I mean, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, if anyone was going to try to, you know, bring back that fun, it was Joel Schumacher. Unfortunately, it was a bit of a miss, but like he tried.
He tried.
And, you know, when those movies came out, I was in that space of like, no, this is serious business. And I felt like Tim Burton was like very, like, Tim Burton took it seriously. Now you look at the Tim Burton ones, he's like, did he take it seriously?
Yeah.
But when you look at Batman Forever now, and Batman and Robin even, I do appreciate those movies more in a way that I didn't when I was a teenager when I first saw them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. I'm pro nipples, bat nipples on George Clooney's suit. I'm for them.
Yeah, nice. Right on. Yeah. Well, I'll do my usual opening here. Alrighty, let's jump into Batman the movie, directed by Leslie H. Martinson, who died at the age of 101. I found that to be a fascinating fact. It's produced by William Dozier, and it's written by Lorenzo Semple Jr., Bob Kane, who gets the based on characters created by, and William Dozier, who also gets a based on the series created by credit. So, yeah. So we open this movie on, you know, the big old, we wish to express our gratitude to the enemies of crime and crusaders against crime throughout the world for their inspirational example. To them and two lovers of adventure, lovers of pure escapism, lovers of adult-rated entertainment, lovers of the ridiculous and the bizarre, till fun lovers. Wow, voice to text failed me on this one. But yeah, that, I mean, that's the thing. We get this big opening thing where they're, you know, thanking all the people that love adventure, and then they do the whole spotlight opening thing. I've always wondered, why does Batman, when he gets the spotlight on him in his credit, he looks excited at first, but then he immediately looks bored and just kind of walks away.
Yeah, I clocked that this time too. And I was like, I wish I could talk to Adam West and ask him about that moment. What's going on there?
Yeah. My favorite, like, well, I mean, just Robin in general. I think Robin, I love how serious Robin is all the time, how he's always just ready to go. Even in this situation, you know, he's got the yellow light on him and it's just the fist. And you're just like, Robin only means business ever.
Yeah.
like in a way, I almost feel like the Robin from Teen Titans Go is one of the ones that closely resembles this particular Robin, except he's angrier.
He's way angrier. I love that Robin. Teen Titans Go Robin's, you know, I could make a case that that's my favorite Robin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like Burt Ward's interpretation of the character because it does feel so genuinely teenaged.
Yeah, so earnest.
So earnest, and he's trying to prove himself so hard that he belongs next to the Batman. He's proving himself constantly, and I feel that.
Now, yeah. I've always wondered, like, how old is Burt Ward supposed to be playing on this? Like, because we know from the comics that Robin is usually a teenage sidekick, but, you know, is he supposed to be like 14 or is he supposed to be 18 or?
Well, he does go to school still, right?
Okay,
like
yeah.
In the show, he goes to school. Is that?
I always thought it was like a college.
You know?
Or is it a college? It might be a college. I can't remember exactly now.
Like maybe it's because he's always dressed up like he's in college, but that's also just the 60s.
Yeah, he's like a prep, you know.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he feels like he can hang out with Archie no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also feel like even if he was like a 16-year-old in the 60s looks like a 30-year-old now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's true.
Those 60-year-olds look older than I do.
Yeah. But like there's even the scene where he's keeping tabs on Bruce Wayne and his date with Kitka, and it's Alfred driving the Batmobile with the mask on. I love Alfred's disguise. That's still one of my favorite gags of all time. But I just, why isn't Robin the one that's just driving around in the Batmobile?
Doesn't have that license.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I'm wondering.
Yeah, I was going to say that to me lends more credence to the idea that he's like probably, I'm guessing like 15, 16, like around there.
There is an episode, I think, where they talk about him having a driver's permit. Is that, am I hallucinating? I feel like
I don't know.
It's been a while since I've revisited the series myself. So now, having seen The Batman, I know you've seen The Batman, the new one in theaters, Matt Reeves, The Batman. How would you compare our Riddler to the one that was Paul Dano played?
Oh, man. Frank Gorshin is such a delight. I think that they both have kind of a manic energy to them that is unnerving. But Frank Gorshin, you know, he kind of leans toward the delightful, and Paul Dano leads towards Zodiac.
Yeah.
And it's a really uncomfortable Riddler. Like the Batman Riddler is maybe even like a little too real world for me. At times, whereas like I wouldn't want to like necessarily be a part of Frank Gorshin's the Riddler's social circle, but I wouldn't necessarily run screaming if he walked into the same room with me either.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, I think Frank Gorshin, like, I don't know, I love like the very first episode of the Batman the animated TV, or not the animated, the 66 series is a Riddler episode, and it's basically like the Riddler tricks Batman into, if I remember right, it's like he tricks Batman into assaulting him basically and then threatens to sue him. That's like the main issue.
So good.
And I just, yeah, I find Frank Gorshin's Riddler to be the best of the villain performances. I think like I just, every time he was on the screen, I just felt immediately drawn to him. And he's also the one that seems the most still nefarious. Like the Joker in the 66 series is just like he's very much the clown, but
yeah.
Like the Riddler still seems like a villain.
He like, seems like a bad guy, like he's not a good guy.
Yeah.
Whereas like
yeah.
Cesar Romero's Joker, he's having a good time.
Yeah.
And you could have a good time with his Joker. If you were partying together, if you were going to like Dave and Buster's together, you'd have a great night out. But if you went to Dave and Buster's with the Riddler, Frank Gorshin's Riddler, he'd empty your pockets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, I always loved when I watched 12 Monkeys for the first time, and Frank Gorshin shows up in that, and it's like, oh my god, that's the Riddler. And that shows you that as an old man, that might be the Riddler that he gives us now, is a much darker, creepier Riddler, based on the character that he gave us as an old man in 12 Monkeys, you know?
I would love to see that. I would love to see ancient Frank Gorshin Riddler.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about, like, the cartoon movies that came out as well, is the fact that any of the voice cast was, or any of the people from the original series that were still alive, were voicing the characters on the in the movie as well.
Yeah.
So, I was going to say, you make a comparison from the Batman to Batman, one of the starkest contrasts for me right off the hop was, you know, in those opening scenes where they're driving to the Batcopter, and then they get in the Batcopter, and they're flying over the city. Like, A, it's weird to see Batman in the daylight. Yeah. To the point that it, like, in current movies, it makes me uncomfortable. Like, it made me uncomfortable at the end of The Dark Knight Rises when he's fighting Bane in the light. It made me uncomfortable in Justice League when they're fighting Superman in that park in the light. But in this movie, it just makes sense. And even Gotham is completely different. Like, you get this light, bright Gotham, not this, like, dank cesspool that you always see in the current day. And I laugh so hard when they're flying over that building and you have all the people, all those girls on top doing whatever they were doing at the time, and they're all cheering for Batman, and they're waving, and it's a different world. It's a very, yeah, very different Batman.
You know what's interesting, though? Like, if you wanted to look at, like, a similarity between the Batman and Adam West's Batman, is how in the 66 movie, he is just like a celebrity. He is just a fixture. Like, when the police need some help, they get on the bat phone, they call him in. He comes down to talk to the commissioner, and they have a conversation. And in Matt Reeves' The Batman, one of the things I just delighted in so much is when he first shows up at the crime scene of Mayor Mitchell, and he's walking through the hallway, and all the police are just looking at him. And Batman is just, it's a little uncomfortable that he's there, but they still just accept that he's there. He's still just kind of like, we've folded him into our process of investigation. And that's one of the things I like so much about the Matt Reeves one, is it was kind of like that bridge between the comic book Batman and, say, Christopher Nolan's Batman, where, like, Kevin Conroy's Batman, the Batman animated series, he was just a guy you worked with when you needed him.
Yeah. I mean, like I said in our episode that just released last week talking about the Batman, it's a buddy cop movie. And that's one of the great things about the Batman. And so, I mean, you kind of get this, but I mean, I always find that the Commissioner Gordon and O'Hara, that's his name, right? O'Hara?
Yeah. I couldn't remember it, but that's it.
Yeah, and I always feel like they feel so lost without Batman. Like, they really seem inept, that if they did not have a Batman, for some reason their police force would not be able to do anything at all.
Right, and you, like, Jeffrey Wright would still be able to function to a degree without his Batman, but O'Hara... he's not going to last a week without Batman.
Right, like, I mean, they come in and they solve the clues right off the beginning that the rocket shoots out, or no, sorry, it was the shark, right? Sorry, we get to the Batcopter. We have to start at the Batcopter. I love reading the fact that things like the Batboat were built for this movie so that they could use them on the series later on. Like, originally this movie was supposed to be like a pilot episode, basically. It was supposed to launch the series, but they ended up putting it between season one and season two instead. But they got a bigger budget for the movie, so they're like, well, we can buy all this stuff that we want for the series.
It's pretty great. Like, I wish more shows had that kind of relationship with a film, you know? Like, X-Files kind of did it. Well, X-Files went off the... No? Hold on. David Duchovny left X-Files. Then they had a David Duchovny, Gillian Anderson X-Files movie. And then Robert Patrick joined on season 9. I can't remember where that first movie fell. Did it fall like between season 6 and 7? I want more of that, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's always nice. I do laugh, though, when it, I mean, obviously the shark is, like, you know, one of the dumbest things ever in a movie, but, like, amazing as well. But I love the very specific things that they are prepared for in that helicopter. Like, and that's one of my favorite things about Batman 66, no matter what. But they've got Barracuda, Whale, Manta Ray, and Shark Repellent. So apparently nothing else is going to be a problem for them. And I love that it's in the helicopter.
I mean, you know, because...
You know, you encounter most of those things in the sky, I believe.
Yep. I had not ever thought of that before. Why are all those anti-sea life devices in the helicopter? But it is one of those helicopters that can land on the water, right? So maybe that's what they use this specific Batcopter for. Maybe there's another Batcopter that doesn't go anywhere near the water.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's also just always prepared. I imagine he just has all this stuff in every vehicle, just in case.
You're probably right.
Yeah, in the Batmobile as well, just in case it goes over a cliff or something. One of my favorite things about that, too, is like when he gets the shark stuck on him and Robin has to do like the upside down.
The completely unnecessary gymnastics
move. Just to pass it.
Yeah, like if it was a real shark, he'd be dead. He would be dead by this time. And it's a very specific timer as well for the shark to explode. You know, it doesn't happen immediately once it clamps onto his legs. It's like after about 5 minutes, then the shark explodes.
Batman doesn't take any damage. He's fine.
There's no bite marks, no... I would always wonder if the shark is meant to be like some sort of animatronic, or is it like Peter Pan style where there's just a ticking time bomb inside of the shark?
Yeah, I like the latter.
Yeah. how much do you think it costs to convert a submarine into a giant penguin?
Oh, whatever it costs, worth it.
Like your average submarine is not designed with a flipper motion on the back of it to be able to
change that.
So good. I need more penguin custom submarines in my Batman movies. That's for darn sure. And yeah. I need more umbrella rockets.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Now, I read that Lee Merriweather wasn't in the opening scene because she actually hadn't been cast yet. Julie Newmar isn't in it because, like, she didn't know that it was coming up, and she had already signed to a comedy called Monsieur Lecoq, which I don't think ever actually got made. Like, when I looked it up on IMDb, there was a series that ran from 1964 to 1965. So I feel like the movie might have been a spin-off from that series. But yeah, I can't actually find a listing on IMDb for Monsieur Lecoq.
I'm sad, because that's the best title I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I'm now scouring the IMDb for Julie Newmar.
The other question I had about like the comparison with the Batman is I've never seen in any of the recent Batman movies... I don't know what her actual name was in the movie, but I thought she might be Aunt Harriet in Matt Reeves' movie.
She's not. It's Dory is the name in the Batman. And when it wasn't Aunt Harriet, I was deeply disappointed. But now I'm trying to think, could it possibly be Dory Harriet? Like, could that still be Aunt Harriet?
And if it had been, I would have thought that would have been a nice touch. It's the same way that I always kind of wish... Like, why can't one of the cops be O'Hara?
Yeah.
Like, why can't you always have... Like, why can't you just throw that in for a nice little Easter egg?
Because there's that one cop in the Batman who... spoilers... I won't spoil the Batman here. I shouldn't spoil the Batman. But there's a cop in there who, in the beginning, doesn't like the idea of the Batman being amongst the cops, but then kind of warms up to him. Yeah. That should have been O'Hara.
Yeah, totally.
Or Bullock or somebody. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, they didn't have a Bullock.
Yeah, no Bullock. Huh. So, do you have a favorite penguin between Burgess Meredith, Danny DeVito, and Colin Farrell?
Oh, that's, you know, picking favorites is very hard for me personally. I like them all for different reasons. Burgess Meredith is having so much fun. What's the scale of villainy with Burgess Meredith's penguin? Like, if the Joker seems like just a swell fella who's got some hijinks up his sleeve, and the Riddler feels like a bad guy, where does the Penguin feel? Like, would you feel comfortable hanging out with Burgess Meredith the Penguin? I bet he would be pretty annoying to be with just because of his speech impediment, but you shouldn't, like, dislike a guy because of his speech impediment, right? Just because he goes like, wah!
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like the 66 Penguin is the type of guy who buys his friends. Like, my assessment is that the only reason that Riddler, Joker, and Catwoman are there with him is because they're just like, ugh, he has the money.
He has
like,
the submarine.
He can fund our plan.
I think you just fixed it for me. I think that's exactly what it is. He's clearly the money bags of the group.
I base that solely on the scene, like when he's pretending to be Commodore Schmidlap after the bomb. And this is one thing I never really got as a kid. I didn't get that Batman and Robin totally knew that he was him the entire time. I always thought like they thought it might be, but they were actually taking him to the Batcave to like figure it out. but then there's that whole situation where he's the Penguin still, like, he's stupid enough to still believe that they believe he's not the Penguin, and so yeah, he's definitely not the brains of the operation, I guess is what I'm saying.
To answer your original question, if I really want a grotesque Penguin, Danny DeVito's Penguin is pretty delightful. He's such an uncomfortable Penguin, but that's what I like about him so much. And like Colin Farrell's Penguin, I think is a really phenomenal one, and I would love to watch many, many HBO episodes centered around his Penguin, and many more spinoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely take the first season. Even if they don't want to give us many, 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 I'll definitely take the one season. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a cinematic Penguin, but I was a big fan of, like, Robin Lord Taylor in Gotham. Oh, I mean, I have issues with Gotham. I felt it started off well and kind of, like, did not end so great. But I thought the Penguin, and the Riddler for that matter, actually, in that show were two of the brighter spots.
Gotham has some moments, but I did fall off of it, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
I never finished it. I like the Penguin from the Jeff Matsuda, The Batman animated series. They kind of gave him like this Hong Kong Kung Fu fighting style that was really surprising. And I thought worked really, really well. Like he would curl himself up and he would bounce around walls and stuff like that. It's pretty unique take on the Penguin, I thought.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you like with all of them, that's the thing, is there is such a love for the voice actors that do some of these roles that, like, even when you talk about, well, who's your favorite Batman? I mean, you have to put someone like Kevin Conroy into the mix. Or favorite Joker, you have to put Mark Hamill in the mix. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
So it definitely is tough to... I mean, I gave you one of the smallest lists of which one's your favorite when it came to the Penguins. I mean, like, you want to talk about, like, who's the favorite Catwoman or who's the favorite Joker, of course, right? Like,
Catwoman, I could just straight up, even though there are many, many Catwomen, and I love Julie Newmar, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Catwoman.
Yeah.
I would have said Zoe Kravitz.
I'm going to confess something right now. I have actually never seen the Halle Berry Catwoman movie.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well,
I haven't either.
You're not missing much. Take that one to Sean on Missing Frames. Maybe he's seen
it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good idea. I should torture him with that.
Oh, boy. So, I read that, like, one of the reasons why we get so much Bruce Wayne in this movie is because, like, Adam West is like, okay, I'll do the movie, but I'm not going to be in the cowl the whole time. But how much time does Burt Ward ever actually spend out of...
his Robin get out.
There's one scene where they rush home and then run upstairs or pretend to run upstairs. But I think that's, like, one of the only times he's actually dressed as Dick.
Yeah. He's pretty much Robin this whole movie. I hadn't thought about that, but that is true.
Yeah,
I think it's only when Bruce comes back after he escapes.
Yeah,
that's the only time he got the legs for it.
When you're in peak physical condition.
If I had Burt Ward's Robin legs, I would be wearing that costume 24/7.
It is like, yeah. I mean, good on Burt Ward. I mean, I'm sure he didn't have a choice, and a job is a job, but like, there's a reason why in the animated series they gave Robin pants.
Yeah. And like, once Tim Drake got pants on in the comics, getting those pants off again was quite difficult, but it has happened. There has been some tidy greenies on tidy Robin greenies. Since.
So the one big seedy underbelly of Gotham City that we do definitely get is, of course, the hideout of the criminals, always filmed at a Dutch angle. This is one of the things I love when I revisit older movies like we do on this show, where it's like, oh, this is the interpretation of a tough guy in this time period. You know, this, you know, like we got the same thing in, like, what, Sister Act was one of them, where it's just like, oh, okay, they're all dressed like George Michael. That's a tough guy in an 80s film. But yeah, with this one, I love the bar that just has a fight going the whole time in the bar.
It's a great scene. And I think it's really well dressed. I think the production designer should get a high five on it. I think it looks really fabulous.
Yeah.
I mean, I love in their actual hideout, in that the one corner of the room that you get to see most often anyway, is like, it reminded me of my daughter's daycare, because it's like they all have their little shelf. And on the Riddler's shelf is just a bookshelf full of books of riddles. The Joker has, like, all these different, like, the laughing teeth and all these different jokes. The Penguin has penguin food or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was just like, they're very organized and very particular for a group of criminals.
I would say very considerate of each other's space. And that
too. Yeah, because they all say, do not touch, I believe. Yeah, and of course, they have their ruse that they use on Schmidlap, where they've got the fake set for him of to make him think that he's still on the boat with the guy that has the flippers in the water.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
And of course, there is the plan that they have to get them onto the spring box to launch them through the window into the arms of the giant exploding octopus.
Yeah, careful planning, well designed. They are clearly craftspeople.
I will say that this is not to poo-poo the production value or like the 1960s how movies were shot, but when I watch a movie like this, I'm like, I think I could make a movie with my phone, because it's just the way that the shots are cut from like wide, like, for example, with the boat, the wide shots of the boat that are clearly just, like, the stunt people or whatever, and then it shoots to the close-up of Adam West hanging on the ladder, clearly in a soundstage, and then all that stuff is just so good, and then even using toy submarines, and then when that guy goes flying through the window, it's just probably an action figure, I assume, just thrown in a bucket of water.
Yeah. I think you could replicate do your own version of Batman the movie. I think where the challenge occurs is with the costuming and with the production design, because you do have to make it look neat and tidy. But like it's totally doable.
Oh yeah. I mean, I realized on this viewing something that I never noticed before, but you know, you don't even need real docks. Because, like, in the whole scene where he's trying to get rid of the bomb and he gets to the edge and there's ducks swimming in them, one of them's, like, swimming sideways because it's not floating upright. Like, I'm like, oh, those aren't real ducks. How have I never noticed that before? But, yeah, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Some days you can't. Still a great line. Still a great scene. Adam West sells the heck out of it.
I've read that he had to run around for like 5 hours the day that they were filming that. That was his whole day. It was 5 hours of running around with the bomb.
You know what? You can't tell. You can't tell. That is acting.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever known until this watch what the deal was with Commodore Schmidlap. Like, I don't think I ever picked up on that as a kid. He's from some sort of brewing company. And
you know
he's got this distiller device. I think when I was a kid, I just thought he was like a pirate.
I certainly didn't pick up on it as a child at all.
Yeah.
Or I think what I actually remember thinking is that he was almost like maybe the submarine. I thought they were on the yacht, and that he was like the captain of the yacht, and all the villains were just hanging out on the yacht. I had a complete Mandela effect situation happen to me at the end of this movie, because I was 100% certain that the final fight happens on the yacht, not the top of the submarine.
Huh. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking that I could have almost said the same thing if you had posed it in that way of, you know, did the final fight take place on a yacht? I might have said yes before I rewatched this movie. Yeah. Huh.
I thought there was a lot more with the yacht, but it's really just the Mirage. That's the only time there you have anything on the yacht, but
yeah. But that's where we do get to see the world's greatest detective at work is on the buoy that's floating there. But, you know, unfortunately, salt and corrosion are the enemy of a detective. As he's,
I love just all the little life lessons that Batman departs throughout his entire run. I feel like we could have had more of those little moments, those teaching moments between Batman and Robin in the movie. I was missing some of that a little bit.
Yeah, because there's in the series, there's usually like one per episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a moral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the moral in this movie, and again, something I never thought, like when the criminals dehydrate all the world leaders and when they bring them back, I'd never noticed before that they, for lack of a better word, fucked it up.
Yeah.
Like, I thought they were successful and they just left and were like, oh, we have a job well done. But now my read on it is like, when Batman says, hey, let's just quietly sneak out the window, he's being like, we need to go.
Because they're all speaking the wrong languages and everything. So
Yeah.
Like the Batman, the Matt Reeves film, things don't go according to plan. You know, he doesn't quite succeed in the way that he may have wanted to succeed.
I have always wondered why the members of the UN all get their own color of sand, whereas the guinea pigs only get gray sand.
People get different sand, I guess.
It's the quality of their soul.
Yeah. It would have been nice if they had like made the sand red, you know, just red shirt them, you know.
Yeah. The other thing was like with Catwoman, I never picked up on her five word name. That's how you get Kitka. I always thought that Kitka was just like a shortening of her first name.
Yeah, I definitely did not ever pick up on that.
Huh? I did not know that. I never realized that. That's funny. You know, I like on their date that Bruce Wayne is drinking milk out of the brandy glass. That's a real power move right there.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, Catwoman introduces herself as Kitanya Arania Titania Karasinka Alisov Kitka.
Huh. That's awesome. What kind of hijinks do you think happens at a foam rubber wholesalers convention?
Nothing good. Nothing good. I don't want to know what goes on in those bar rooms and behind doors.
I mean, Brad, you're a big con guy. Like, do you think people are dressing up in costumes and getting autographs from their favorite foam rubber wholesalers?
You know, I would love to think that's the case, but in my experience going to book cons, when I used to work for Barnes & Noble, and all the managers would get into like a convention center or a hotel room together, it was just drinking. It was just drinking. And nothing good ever comes of just drinking.
Can't imagine what just drinking and rubber might lead to.
Nothing good.
Well, I was trying to shoehorn that in as a segue for myself, because I think it's time for Sponsorship Corner. So always on the lookout for product placements in movies, this week, Batman the Movie is brought to you by Skyways Aviation, Lincoln and Chrysler Cars, Pentax Cameras, Polaris Missiles, and the fictional Gotham City Cab Company, Gotham City Gazette, and the Foam Rubber Wholesalers Convention. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. That one was a hard one to find the, you know, a segue in. Usually I'm talking about something. Like Pentax, it was one of the photographers at the beginning when they were... the reporters were all at police headquarters. That was when you saw one of them with the Pentax camera. It might have even been Miss Kitka.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. Polaris missiles. Oh, boy.
That one was a stretch.
Brad, I was going to ask you, I mean, this is kind of in your wheelhouse, but as the comic book couples counseling, what is your take on the relationship between, I guess it's really Bruce Wayne and Kitka, not necessarily Batman. I know you guys have done Batman and Catwoman.
I love throughout the Adam West series, the relationship that Bruce Wayne has with the many Catwomen. And as a kid, I didn't necessarily pick up on how lewd the innuendos are. They're like, they're very safe innuendos, but they're there and they are horny as hell in the show. And I think in this movie, they're maybe like a little less horny than the scenes between Eartha Kitt and Adam West and Julie Newmar and Adam West. But it's there. It's there. Lisa and I have like different opinions about what should go on between Catwoman and Batman. I like them as a couple, and I like them continuously flirting and will they or won't they with each other. Lisa wants them to take a break and never get back together again. She's done.
Oh, wow.
She does not think that they belong together. Now, if we were talking specifically, I agree. But if we got Lisa talking about the Julie Newmar Catwoman and Adam West Batman, she'd probably be more into it. But in the comics, she doesn't want them to have anything to do with each other.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a really hot take. especially given that in the Batman, I thought their story was I was just like, ooh, sizzle.
Well, I mean we both liked that relationship as well. We certainly want to see that explored more between Zoe Kravitz and Robert Pattinson, because yeah, sizzle. There's sizzle there. There's sizzle all around them. Yeah, I shouldn't speak for Lisa, but I've done it, and I just know that she's not pro Bat Cat. She's all right. Not Bat Cat.
Yeah. It's one of those things, watching this movie as a kid, I always hated this, like, I think when you're a kid, you just want to see Batman, and I always just kind of tuned out all the Bruce Wayne stuff.
Sure.
Didn't really care for it. But on this watch, like, that final scene between the two of them where she trips and he realizes who she is and all that, I actually kind of felt sad for her, even though it's so cheesy with the music playing in the back, like, my heart broke for him a little bit. When I watched it this time.
Yeah, I think there's some sadness there for sure. I think they both play it really, really well. I was also that kid who was missing Batman when Adam West was just being Bruce Wayne in this film. But I think even though maybe like I was a little frustrated with that as a child, I was so into the idea of there being so many villains in this movie, you know, because like Batman, yeah, the movie really was like our first version of the Avengers, where like all these characters are in one story. And so if I was a little disappointed that there was no Batman or not as much Batman, I had so many other things to get excited about.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy to me that in the 19, like in, because of the time that I watched it, it was around the same time that you had like the DC Superpowers action figures and like,
yeah,
the 1980s, like toys were massive.
Yeah.
And this movie seems to me like the type of movie that was created to sell toys, because you have the Batcopter, the plane, the bike, all the villains, the Batmobile, obviously, like the, you know, the Batcave even. And it's, yeah, there you go. Sean's got it. And it's kind of like,
these are original, like these are from the 60s.
These aren't like, oh, new, yeah, ones. Look at those that.
Are they?
Yeah. That's, yeah. So that's the Batmobile.
And it has the bit on the front that, it's got a little blade that comes out on the front of it, right? That
comes out. Yeah, and then,
I thought those were the premium Hot Wheels, but
no, that's OG.
Those are OG. So,
they're
unfortunately up there on my shelf collecting dust. But yeah, you're totally right. I mean, right there, I've got a Batmobile and a Batboat, and 100% to sell toys. I had the full size. They were like Ken doll sized. Like, I inherited all these from some family member that was older than I am. But I had a Batman and a Riddler, and I think...
I guess they might have had, like, the Mego figures might have been around.
Yeah.
At the time of this movie came out.
Yeah. But you didn't have like, you know, superpowers, that whole line, like every character had a toy, mm-hmm. but you didn't really get the Adam West era Batman figures until, like Todd McFarlane's got him now. There was somebody before there was Todd McFarlane.
Yeah. There was a DC Direct
line
before the Todd McFarlane ones, but I heard that it took a long time. Even like the DVD, like the Blu-ray set, like you could only get it, I think, as of 2014, because there was so many licensing issues with the Bill Dozier series and the movie as well.
And if I remember correctly, was it primarily because you would have people like pop out of the windows, like all these celebrities, and so you had to like get the licensings from their estates?
Yeah, I remember hearing. Yeah, something like that. I remember hearing Kevin Smith talk about it on his podcast once.
Like Sammy Davis is in an episode, so you got to go get Sammy Davis's estate approval.
Yeah, I think there was something about that to that, and then there was also like the reason why the movie hit was able to be produced was because there was like a differentiation between the TV rights and the film rights and all that stuff. But yeah,
they figured it out, and I am very happy because of that, because I love that Blu-ray set.
Oh yeah,
that's good. Yeah. I know. I know. There's. It always bugs me that I can't get a hold of some of those classic TV shows because of music rights.
Yeah,
like it's interesting to hear that it's because of these celebrity appearances that there was a hold up on it. But yeah, like Malcolm in the Middle, I've been waiting for that to be available anywhere, but because of music licensing, you can't have it.
Yeah, it's the Drew Carey show for me.
Yeah.
I love that show. Yeah. Maybe I should scour eBay to see maybe there is a Penguin Submarine replica or Hot Wheels or something.
There's not a Hot Wheels, but now that I think about it, like there should be.
Yeah, there should be
a Penguin Submarine Hot Wheels. I have every Batmobile related Hot Wheels of the modern era anyway.
Well, here's a question for you. Do you have a favorite Batmobile? That's easier than picking favorite people.
I think. Or is again, it? If we're sticking just with the adaptation.
Live action cinematic.
Live action cinematic. I mean, the 89 Batmobile. The original Tim Burton Batmobile is probably it. I love the George Barris Batmobile that's in this movie. I think it's a great car.
Yeah.
It's like I can't remember what they customed a car that existed, like this 50s future car, this World's Fair car for this show. George Barris and his designer, who I'm also blanking on, did it. And it looks fabulous. But the 89 Batmobile, it's like otherworldly. Yeah. It's so cool looking.
Yeah. All right,
yeah, the 89 Batmobile is like sex on wheels. The car is just so gorgeous.
And I was always so frustrated when they decided to like update it in the Schumacher films, because the Batman Forever one with like that weird neon turbine in the
set. Yeah, the glowing, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting, but none of them looked as sexy as that 89 one.
Now, do you think all of them have atomic batteries, though? Atomic batteries to power turbines to speed?
You know what? I don't. I think only the George Barris Batmobile has atomic batteries, and maybe that's why it's the best one. I like the new Batmobile, like the muscle car Batmobile.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially the introduction of it.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. With the apartment, I did want to also bring up their plan to shine the bat signal from the roof. And I couldn't help but feel the same. I'm reaching here, but the parallels to the Matt Reeves Batman as well, where it's just like, okay, as long as the light's on, the bad guys know something's up. You know, and that's kind of what their plan is in this movie, is exactly what Commissioner Gordon said. Or, sorry, I got chastised by my son, Lieutenant Gordon, said in the Batman, you know.
Yeah. I like the idea how in the Batman, the Reeves film, of it not being a signal but being a warning, and then at the end of the film talking about how he needs to be more than vengeance, and kind of like transitioning this idea of it not being so much a warning to the criminals but can we get it to be a beacon for the citizens? So as long as it's up in the sky, we're okay to walk under it. Like, that's where I want the direction of that vengeance arc to go.
yeah, for sure. Now, what about the riddles in this particular movie? First, we've got the one that is all about the clues that they have. Like, it happened at sea, so that's C for Catwoman. And the shark was pulling his leg like the Joker. And it's something fishy, so that's the Penguin. And we have to solve one giant riddler. That's what the first one is. Do you think that one's a reach? Or, you know?
Yes.
Yes. I think a massive reach.
There are so many reaches in the Riddler's riddles throughout the Adam West series. And I kind of like the more ridiculous they become and the more impossible they become. I think they're just, you know, it's a good time.
Because the other one is someone Russian is going to slip on a banana peel and break their neck. Yes, Robin. That's the only possible meaning. Of course it is.
Yeah. I like it.
Well, what was the one with the egg? It's like what goes up white and comes down yellow and white. And then it was the one that like led them to the United World Foundation. Like it was something like to do with they hold the basket of the world and all this stuff. And you're just kind of like,
yeah. What? Keep your eggs in one basket. Like something. Yeah.
Yeah. I like how they felt that they couldn't say United Nations. Like it had to be the United World Building.
Right.
we celebrate you in our opening like words that we put on the screen, but now we're going to make sure that we keep your anonymity.
Yeah.
It's kind of odd that like these four villains unite. They're all fairly smart, but I love that scene when they abduct Bruce Wayne and then they're all talking about it afterwards and they're like, oh, like I can't believe Batman didn't come. Like, where was he? Must have been doing something, or you did your riddle wasn't good enough to like
let you know where
we were and all this stuff. And it's just kind of like that. Those are things I never noticed as a kid that were, I see the tongue in cheek nature of it now.
Yeah. I mean, I do also like the scene where they end up bringing in a tied up Bruce Wayne to see Miss Kitka in the bed. You know, like there's that. I like that ruse that they pull. That's one of their smart plans that they have until later. But I'm just wondering, like, were they just marching him up and down hallways before they took him into that room? To make it,
yeah, because she tells him to take him down the labyrinthine path to room 17, but it's really just the door that was right in front of him.
that's good.
And he doesn't clue in when he comes back to rescue Miss Kitka and finds out that the door is right there. You know,
yeah,
what happened to the labyrinthine path? You know,
I mean, as a kid, that last scene of them fighting on the ship deck. With the words, like the bang pow and all that. That was as high film as I had ever seen in my life. And similar to how I often would just I would fast forward the Princess Bride to the point where, like, the Dread Pirate Roberts and Inigo fight. It's the same with this movie. Most often I would just fast forward it to the end just so I could watch this last fight. And I was, like, fascinated with the idea of just punching somebody off a ship into water. To the point where I probably enacted that in the bathtub thousands of times. And later when I was older, I managed to figure out how you could put like the dryer on a spin cycle and like have it fill up. And then I would just play with my action figures. And I just was like, everybody had to get punched into the water. It was just, that's just the way it had to go.
You know, like, I feel like this movie really does accomplish the goal of being Batman the movie. It does feel like something that they could not have contained in the course of two episodes or three episodes on the show. Like, if you're going to sell yourself as the movie version of the thing that you can find on television, I think the show, the film really does that. And like, I feel like the actors really give themselves to these roles. And rewatching it this week, it did feel like a very authentic experience within the tone they were providing. It never felt like, you know, Adam West didn't want to be there. Sure, maybe he didn't want to wear the cowl, but he was on set and he delivered his Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all I know is when the Batman, Matt Reeves, the Batman, comes out on streaming, if someone doesn't do like a super cut of one of the fights, like the subway platform fight, the darkness hallway fight, you know, if someone doesn't do a super cut and put Bam, Biff, Pow, Zowie over top of it, I mean, you know, you're missing a great opportunity.
I would love to see, like, at the end, without spoiling the Batman, when he is wailing on that one guy and he just can't stop beating that dude's face in, I just want pow, pow, Biff, Biff, Biff. Like machine gun fire of Biffs, Bams, and Pows.
Well, there we go. That's Batman the movie. Now, Colin, Brad, on IMDb... IMDb, that's the hip way of saying it.
So fancy.
Yeah. On IMDb, it scored 6.5 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 71. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 79% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 62%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a Biff Bam Pow to the face. Hit us with some reviews.
Okie dokie. Where's my Batman reviews?
That's tragically low. I mean, I have to say some of those numbers, you know?
I think, you know, I just don't think, like, how many people who are on IMDb, you know, click-clacking away, are actually watching this era of Batman?
That's true, yeah.
And those that are, who are, like, making sure that The Dark Knight is rated, like, the greatest movie of all time, they're probably not giving Batman the movie a high score.
I don't know. I honestly think to really appreciate the Batman the movie, you had to have seen it first. It would be, anybody who watches the Nolan or Matt Reeves or even like the Burton films for that matter and goes back, it's just you're almost too tainted at that point to really appreciate it, I think.
Yeah, if your only experience is with Schumacher, you might like this one, but
if Schumacher's your guy, you might be fine.
You might be good with this one. I don't know. Like, I think you just have to be open to the idea of Batman being more than one tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've uttered the phrase, George Clooney is my favorite Batman, then you might like Adam West.
I would love to find that person. Please find me the human. Are you listening? I will not mock you. I will celebrate you. If you are the person who truly believes that George Clooney is your Batman, if that is your go-to Batman, I want to hear from you. I'm at Mouthfork on Twitter. I want to help you celebrate that because you are a rare flower and you will approach it.
Okay, Colin, let's do some reviews.
Yeah, I mean, just to go back to Batman and Robin for a second, as much as I like crap on that movie these days, when it came out, like, I watched every Entertainment Tonight special that even slightly referenced that movie. All the Kellogg's cereal boxes had these 3D little like picture things on them. I got every single one. I was down for that.
I was going to say there were glasses at McDonald's you could buy.
That was Batman Forever.
Yeah, but that was Batman Forever. Yeah.
I still have those.
I've got some too. Yeah.
I saw this another anecdote, but I saw on Facebook Marketplace a couple weeks ago somebody selling the McDonald's Batman Forever fry packages. I don't know if you remember. They were pretty sweet back in the day, but the idea that somebody's just been holding on to this for like almost 20 years.
Dude, you don't even know. You should see all the Phantom Menace stuff that I have. I don't even have it. It's in my parents' basement in Tupperware boxes, but like drink cups.
I was gonna say, did you have all the Pepsi cans?
I don't still have the Pepsi cans, but I did have the Pepsi cans.
Yeah,
I remember. But I had all the Pizza Hut cups that you had to order, like with Jar Jar head and the
Gala
head.
Yeah,
nice. I have that stuff still.
Yeah,
sweet.
A million.
All right, I'll get to some reviews. Fire Spider. 5 out of 5 stars says, I was just a kid. We all would race to the schoolyard the day after it aired and talk about all the cool stuff that happened on the show. The kids who had color TV were really envied back then.
They were
pretty rare too. I'm just going to take a break from this review. I feel like we're going to get a lot of reviews that also reference the TV show, not just the movie. But anyways, Catwoman was especially amazing to all of us. The beautiful, sexy-eyed, and statuesque Julie Newmar. Wow, pow, wham, lol.
Okay.
Pure camp and so much fun. We were so serious about that show, though. Truly, Adam West was our hero.
Yeah, so for anyone that, you know, missed it at the top, no, it is Lee Merriweather in this movie, not...
Yeah.
Even though we went on a Julie Newmar tangent, you're right. I think it's referencing not just... either that or they just didn't do their homework.
Lee Merriweather is worth some wham bam pows in that review. That's for true. Sure.
Yeah.
Wait, guys, that was my bad. I accidentally, when I googled Batman 1966, clicked on the wrong icon. So now that was a Batman TV show. I was wrong for assuming that someone was made a mistake. That was me.
Hey, in 70 something episodes for you to make your first mistake with a review. I mean,
all right. Josiah McCord says 4 out of 5 stars. The Adam West era of Batman is one that I actually enjoy because it's not afraid to have fun. I also love the Nolan and Snyder version of Batman, and Matt Reeves' Batman looks like it will be awesome, but it's nice to look back on this era when Batman was something that any kid could watch and laugh with. Batman and his villains are inherently pretty silly, and at the time that this movie and the Adam West show was being released, Batman was a campy character, and there's nothing wrong with that. The movie has funny moments, and then he puts in quotes, sometimes you just can't get rid of a bomb. Fun action, then in parentheses, Bat Shark Repellent, and a colorful cast. Not too much to complain about here. I'm glad this movie has become such a classic.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Levi Gifford says, for any Bat fans who are haters of this movie, I say, oh, lighten up! Batman 66, while a vastly different take on the character, works because it knows what it is and embraces it. It is campy fun at its finest and a Silver Age comic book brought to life. And it's a fun movie throughout, with some funny moments and a memorable cast. The same can be said for the TV series, so if you're a Bat fan willing to accept something different, enjoy Batman the Movie, the original!
Yeah!
In color, exclamation point.
Damian Boyce says, 5 out of 5 stars, the original Batman movie is a spinoff from the Adam West Burt Ward Batman TV series of the 1960s. Clearly shot with a much bigger budget, we get the full array of Batman vehicles. Bat bike, bat boat, bat helicopter, not to mention... the complete array of Bat villains. This is camp kitsch entertainment that is absolutely crazy and totally ridiculous, but huge, huge fun, all caps. What's not to love? Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
So apparently there's like only one really memorable quote in this movie then, if that's the one that keeps getting said.
But wait. Forwarder Jump says, 5 out of 5 stars, greatest Batman, this is all caps by the way, greatest Batman film to date. The jokes are funny to this day, and it's legitimately engaging despite the campy silliness. I recommend watching this with any kids of yours or younger siblings who like Batman, but can't be entertained by the modern movies without being scared or bored. And then he says, I don't know what this number is. 1, 2, 6, 9, 12. It's a 1 with 17 zeros out of 10. I don't know what that is. 1,000? 10,000 million?
She likes it.
Yeah. 10,000 million out of 10. And then he ends it with, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Wow, that's more than Tony Stark's daughter loves him. I mean, 10,000 million? I don't want to brag, but she loves me 10,000 million.
Sorry, I have one last one. Okay. P. Fitzgibbon says, 5 out of 5 stars, the real Batman. Those who don't agree are responsible for Trump, chemical weapons, deforestation, climate change, ocean dumpage, and the extinction of species. It's a perfectly logical connection.
Wow.
Perfectly logical.
Wow.
There you go.
Right on. So, yeah, 6.5 out of 10 and 62 from audiences, or 71 and 79. You know, it's Batman the Movie. On this viewing, where does it fall for you guys? Let's go to Brad first.
I think it's a great film. I think it totally achieves what it sets out to achieve. And I think the only thing that you can compare it to really is the TV show.
Yeah.
And so like, is it a proper extension of that series? Does it feel like that series taken up a notch or two? I think it definitely does. I think it's a total blast. And I think, you know, it's a great starter Batman also. You know, you talk about like, you can't really show your kid Ben Affleck's Batman, right? Like, yeah. You know, your 3-year-old or whatever. But you could show them Adam West's Batman, and it'll get them into the bat waters. But you got to watch out for all those bat sharks and all those bat shark repellents.
Now, see, I mean, I like throwing favorites at you, and I'm sorry to do this again, Brad. I've heard you on other shows where you can rapid fire a list like nobody's business.
But yeah, if
you had to go for like a favorite era of Batman, which is your favorite era of Batman?
Well,
that's too tough, huh?
Well, it's not that it's tough. I can answer it. I've ranked all 17 theatrical Batman experiences, and my favorite Batman movie is Batman Begins, the Christopher Nolan film, because it really is the only place where you can go to get Batman's complete story in one narrative. Like, you can't even find that in the comic books.
Okay.
It only exists in Batman Begins, and there's no other version of Batman Begins in anything else either.
Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like it's such a unique item, and we don't really respect it as like the complete Batman origin film because we're so sick and tired of origin films, but it's the only complete Batman origin. That's why I love Batman Begins.
That's
and
true.
Therefore, I kind of like, I love the Nolan era. Like, I like after 2005, Batman Begins, Dark Knight, even Dark Knight Rises, I like a lot about it. It's got its issues, but I like a lot about it.
Yeah.
But if we're going to say like era, and we're going to include Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which then encompasses the animated series.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Batman.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like Batman 66 can't really be in the conversation. Like, it really is its own thing. Like, for some people, yes, the 60s Batman may be their favorite, but it's hard to include it in the conversation because, like pointed out earlier, it's just so vastly different from what the, you know, people focused on as, you know, what Batman is and the darkness and everything.
What I think is most important about Adam West's Batman is that it still works for what it is. And I think it's important to show people that if you can accept this tone of Batman, you will have a good time with it. And therefore, not every Batman should be the same tone. And I think if you watch the Adam West series and then you go watch Dietrich Bader's version of Batman in the animated Batman Brave and the Bold, which really feels like the spiritual sequel to this series, that is its own magical thing. And I do think we can get away from the ultra serious Batman. And Matt, I mean, I loved the Matt Reeves take, but the Matt Reeves take is still kind of in that same lane that was being traveled by Snyder and Nolan, and even Tim Burton to a lesser degree. And I would like, since we have so many different types of superhero stories, I'd like a tone that wasn't necessarily all the way into Adam West, but was somewhere in that Brave and the Bold, Kevin Conroy era of tone. Like, yeah. Is there a mix between Batman the Brave and the Bold animated series and Batman the animated series? For me, I think that would be my perfect Batman, which would probably be like the Jim Aparo, Cape Crusader, Norm Breyfogel comic book era.
Yeah. I mean, like you pointed out at the beginning, we've got 80 years of history. And when you look at the fact that you're not only drawing from these cinematic Batmans or the animated Batmans, but then there's also the television Batmans. There's the old man Batman in the Titans movie. There's Batfleck. Yep. There's the Batman that showed up in the Flashpoint of the CW, like the Arrowverse. We had like Kevin Conroy show up as an old Batman. There's so much to pull from that. Yeah, there's just so many different choices of Batman out there that... I lost my train of thought. Fuck. I hate when I get into the middle of a sentence.
All Batman are valid. Like, there are so many of them. Just, you know, swim in, take a plunge into the Batman universe. Go beyond the Batman that you're comfortable with. You might find a Batman that you might appreciate for different reasons.
There you go. That's what I needed. That's what I needed that to cap off with is, yeah, all Batman are valid. I've heard you say that on your own show before. Colin, what about you on this viewing? What did you think of Batman the movie?
I watched it, I think, with adult eyes for the very first time and got way more of the campy humor than I've ever experienced before. And I mean, I still like it. Like, I still think it's a great movie. I totally agree with Brad. I think it's, like, I can't wait to show it to my daughter because I think it is the perfect introductory Batman. I would be between this and Brave and the Bold, probably, because I think they're both just a lot of fun. I love Adam West. I'm sad I never got to meet him. I tried twice, and both times I bought tickets to a con, and he had to pull out at the last minute, and so it just never worked out. But he'll always be my first Batman. So I still hold this movie in very high regard. I don't think it's the best Batman movie there is, but I still think, yes, it is a valid Batman movie for sure.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I have a confession to make to you guys. Like, I asked you both about the animated movies. Before watching it on this viewing, I only knew of The Return of the Masked Crusader. I did not know about the Two-Face movie. And so when I was doing research for this movie, I'm like, oh shit, there's a second one. So immediately, like, I went and watched it as soon as I had watched this movie. And so that's one thing that I can definitely say about this viewing of Batman is, thank God it brought me a third Batman movie with William Shatner and, like, just all the glory that came with the third Batman movie. Because I feel it brought me the joy that this Batman used to bring me as a child, knowing that, okay, more content. Yes.
I don't know what the reality to this story is, but my understanding is if Batman was going to have another season on television, they were going to have a Two-Face. Yeah. And that Two-Face was going to be possibly played by Clint Eastwood.
Oh, wow.
What?
So, like, a very, very young pre-spaghetti westerns Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And that sure would have been something. And there was, I believe, a script produced, written by Harlan Ellison, the science fiction writer behind City on the Edge of Forever.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then not too long ago, like 5 or 6 years ago, they took that script and adapted it into a comic book as part of the Batman 66 DC series.
Okay.
And you can read it, and it's pretty darn cool. And the movie, Batman versus Two-Face with William Shatner, is based on that comic book script situation.
Okay. Okay. Huh. Yeah. No, I did. I know when I was looking through my research, I did see something about they did want to introduce Poison Ivy and Two-Face in a new season. But yeah, it got canceled, unfortunately. So right on. Yeah. I mean, I fall close to where both of you are, you know, where it's just every Batman is valid. I love this movie and it's a great entry point. Like, I just echo exactly what you guys said about this. I still love this movie. It's so much fun. It brings so much joy still. And it found me a new movie to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shatner's so good in that movie.
Oh, he was. He was. Yeah. Well, there we go. That is Batman the movie. And that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. A big, huge thank you to our guest, Brad Gullickson. Oh, Brad. Time to plug all your stuff. You know, where can people find you and your lovely wife doing your thing and you on your own as well?
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure. Loved chatting Mystery Men with you guys last time. Had even more fun talking Batman the movie. We'll have to make sure that we get the better half on again in the near future. But if you want to seek out Lisa, you can find her on Twitter and Instagram at Sidewalk Siren. Of course, you can find both of us at comicbookcouplescounseling.com. Listen to our podcast. We're currently in the middle of a couples session series detailing the romantic woes between Marco and Alana for Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples' Saga series. Having a great time with that. And so sad. It's so sad, but it's so much fun to talk about.
That's the second time you guys have touched Saga as well.
Yes, we covered Saga back in 2019. We did the first four trade paperbacks, took a break as Saga also took a break, and now that Saga's back in single issues, we've come back and we've done an episode on volume 5 of the trade paperback. We just dropped this week an episode on volumes 6 and 7, and then we're going to do obviously 8 and 9 as two separate episodes. We also just got word today that we'll be doing an interview with Chris Samney and Laura Samney for their comic book Jonna and the Impossible Monsters. Chris Samney is one of my all-time favorite cartoonists, and it's really wild that he's agreed to come on the show with his lovely bride himself. So yeah. Herself. So yeah, that's wild, and that's what we're doing. ComicBookCouplesCounseling.com at CBCC Podcast on Twitter.
Right on. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, just tell people. Word of mouth is the lifeblood of a podcast trying to get noticed. You know, word of mouth goes so far, you have no idea. Or if you want to help us get noticed on all the algorithms out there, you can go to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. 5 is preferred. Give us 5 stars. That would be the best.
It doesn't matter.
I'm doing it right now. I'm writing a 5-star review right now.
Nice. It doesn't matter what you say in the reviews, but just, you know, help us mess with the algorithm and drive us up the charts. Help us get noticed. Or if you want to go above and beyond and you want to help us keep the show running, you want to donate to the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and you become an executive producer. And you even get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, for all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. And if you would like to write us, you can do so at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.